the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast,
foretold in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
As the winds swirl from the north across the heartland of America, this is Derek Gilbert. I just sounded ominous. I like that.
You didn't even say this is PID Radio.
Well, because you had just said that before in the introduction.
I
there,
did,
so,
did.
Yeah.
This is...
It's amazing what you can do with a little electronic gadgetry.
And when your voice is really, really hoarse.
Yeah.
This is Sharon Gilbert, just in case you didn't figure that one out. And welcome to our humble bunker. We have, a few things to talk about. And I have something really, it's kind of preying on my heart that we're going to talk about later. It's that story that I shared with you earlier, and I'll tell you how I got into it. It's a story from long ago that you probably are all familiar with, but we will get to that in a bit because you had some news up front, banking
money. Yeah, and that's kind of what led to
– Here, you got two tens, so I'll give you five.
Well, we'll talk about that in just a minute as we go back to the future or go forward into the past to find an explanation for the mortgage mess that's plaguing the United States, the mortgage mess that has led to the global economic doldrums, perhaps imminent collapse,
and
some are wondering.
That is indeed the mold. You know, I think that the banks have been getting reverse mortgages. You know, they're taking the things that they're holding
for
all of us, and they think, you know, we got these properties that we essentially own, and hey, why can't we make money off these?
That's essentially what happened. You're right.
I know.
They were watching those commercials with Robert Wagner and said, hey, that looks like a really good idea.
Yeah, set us up. Sign us up. In the
income
meantime,
for life.
We'll turn these things into cookie factories.
Yeah. What we've been seeing in the news is a couple of memes. First, that there may have been some inconsistencies in the paperwork, maybe some things that were rushed through without proper, you know, due diligence. And so Bank of America, you heard, and some other of the large banks, Wells Fargo, Citi, J.P. Morgan Chase, have been sort of stopping the process to review, make sure the paperwork's all correct. But the story's been coming out that what actually happened, in many of these cases is that as more and more Americans found themselves upside down in their homes, in their mortgages, the banks were hiring people with no experience or training as loan officers or loan servicers, loan...
That explains all those ads in the paper way back when, loan officer.
Sure, sure.
No experience required.
Loan processors, and they were essentially brought in, and they were trained for 2 weeks to do essentially one thing, and that was to sign their names on foreclosure documents as fast as humanly possible.
And once you signed it, we're going to say, we didn't even know you.
Yeah.
Did you work here?
Well, that's it. I mean, there's a story that was... aired on a TV station down in Houston. In San Francisco over the weekend. The CBS affiliate in San Francisco over this past weekend, ran a story on this. And, the spokesperson for Wells Fargo said, this didn't happen here. We didn't hire people who had no private debt. Anyone who didn't follow proper procedure will be terminated immediately. But what insiders were saying is, look, I dropped out of college. I needed a job. They hired me, and I basically all I did was sign about 300 or 400 documents a day, foreclosure papers, and without even reading the document. And of course, what they're signing is a document saying that they have gone through each of the papers pertaining to the foreclosure and have personal knowledge of the particulars, the financial statement of the person in the home, and so forth, and verifies that it's all true as per the documents being presented by the bank for the purpose of foreclosing and retaking possession of the house. And Wells Fargo's not the only one. Bank of America, Citi, and so on. You know, all of the major banks apparently have participated in this. And what we are seeing now, that is meme number one, is that you know, there's something irregular going on with all of the foreclosures, which is why attorneys general in most of the states in the U.S. are beginning to investigate this. Mm-hmm. This is political dynamite. This is why when it became known that the United States Congress had passed a bill essentially on a voice vote to make it easier for documents in proceedings, legal proceedings like this, to be accepted without out-of-state signatures, which would have, some people thankfully noticed, made it easier for these sorts of foreclosures to go through. President Obama stuck it in his pocket, you know, the pocket veto.
Now he refused to sign it. It wasn't a pocket veto.
Well, that's what it is. It's a pocket veto. He refuses to sign it. Instead of actually signing a veto of the bill.
Or did he? Oh, that is what he did.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Sorry. For some reason. Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So forget I'm even here.
Yeah.
He's
got some political sense, but he didn't even have the guts to stand up and say, because he's, let's face it, Barack Obama, like George Bush before him, are essentially bought and paid for by Wall Street. So anyway, and of course you get spokesmen from the banks who show up on the, especially the financial channels like CNBC, to say, well, you know, this is just a minor blip and there are some irregularities, but people shouldn't have been taking out mortgages they couldn't afford. And, you know, it sends a bad signal to your children if you walk away from a home that does. Okay. All right. Maybe that's true. But the bankers who willingly induced people.
He vetoed it.
A pocket veto.
Oh, so, okay. Oh, I see what you, all right. Just, I'll come in again.
I mean, basically, it's the same thing. It's just a different way of doing it.
Instead of actually saying I'm vetoing this by signing here.
Yeah, it's just a different procedure. Instead of, vetoing the bill and saying, I don't know what procedure the president has to, what paperwork he signs.
Well, the great thing is he's hired somebody to sit there and sign things for him.
Yes, 300 bills a day without reading them. I mean, apparently the people who've been processing foreclosure documents for the big banks have a future in processing new healthcare regulations.
Yes, they do.
So anyway, but the meme is being put out to the American people that the banks shouldn't be penalized for the people who took on more mortgage than they could afford. And that, you know, this is just a little blip. This, you know, this paperwork thing is just, and we need to get back to the business of clearing the overstock of housing.
Wasn't that the whole idea in the first place?
Of letting the banks.
Wasn't TARP all about clearing the toxic assets?
Yes, it was. And of course, that's not exactly how it played out.
It was called Toxic Asset
Relief Program. Right?
Exactly.
So that didn't happen, obviously. So anyway, the banks are now.
I'm shocked.
Engaging in. The meme that we keep hearing from the media is that it's the fault of the borrowers and that we need to get back to the. You know, foreclosing as many houses as fast as we can so we can get them sold and clear up the real estate mess, because until we can start selling houses again, the economy's not going to recover. The recovery is going to slow down because people won't be buying new homes and then buying new carpeting and refrigerators and stuff like that.
You know, if anybody tells you that the recovery is here and just give it time, just ask them what else they're selling, because, folks, it's just going to get worse. If you take a look, the U.K. has just – they just slashed 500,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Government jobs.
And
how many people work for the government over there? That the UK is not that big.
No, 60 million people total in the UK.
So if there are 500,000 people who no longer have government jobs, how many people are currently working for the government?
That's a really good question.
And how many people are currently working for the government here?
Well, lots, which is what helped keep the official unemployment rate from hitting 10%, you know, hiring all those census workers. But there are some economists and, you know, economic bloggers that I read and you know, try to fit into my schedule who are predicting that when the government's next official unemployment report comes out just after the election, conveniently, it will go over 10%. That they've been basically fudging the data and fudging, you know, this, that, and the other. I mean, they came out and they said that, you know, consumer confidence, consumer spending is up, while Gallup, which has been doing its own independent polling, is showing, based on the surveys that it takes, that consumer spending, what you and I spend in a given day at, you know, Big Lots or McDonald's or whatever, is at its lowest point in the last 2 years. So how can we be spending more, according to the government, while Gallup says we're telling them when they ask us, we're spending less? Somebody's fudging the data. And I recommend the website shadowstats.com. Shadowstats.com. If you ever want to look at an economist who goes into the raw numbers and recreates the statistics the way they used to be reported before our government started fudging them back during Bush 1's administration.
So here's a question for you. If they're saying that we're spending more, are they saying that we're spending more dollars? Is that the data?
Yeah.
Could it be that, say, a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago, we bought 10 items a week, and now we're still buying 10 items a week, but they cost three times as many dollars?
Possibly. It could also be that we're spending more on things like gasoline, you know, on fuel.
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
So,
all I know is that when I go, look, I take it all down to boxes of macaroni and cheese and toilet paper. Whenever you have money, how many boxes of macaroni and cheese and how many rolls of toilet paper can you buy with it? I mean, I'm serious. This is what the mindset I got into as a student. And so if you come up to me and you say something is $100, I very quickly think, how many boxes of macaroni and cheese can I buy with that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Macaroni and cheese is no longer 10 boxes for a dollar the way it was when I could find it when I was a student way back when. But now it is more like a dollar a box. And toilet paper is a dollar a roll.
Mm-hmm.
And they've shortened the rolls. Take a look at the rolls, people. They are no longer – set it down on the table. Take a look at it. They're about an inch shorter than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe the same number of little tissues on there, little, you know, squares. But those squares are no longer as – the square footage is different, folks.
Mm-hmm.
These things matter.
And they're going to figure out how to make those sheets out of, you know, one atom thick carbon before too long.
Graphene.
Yes. So
you're so funny. Well, the good news is, as far as the banking is, you recently interviewed a couple of guys who have it down. They have figured out exactly what's going on with the banking problem.
Yes, and they actually explain it in a way that average people
can understand.
So this is a demonstration now of what exactly has been going on in the banking industry as explained.
Well, these two guys you ran into on the street.
Yeah, yeah. And they basically gave a demonstration, thankfully had the recorder there. So this is how they explained the banking mess to me.
Hey, Lou, you gave me too much money.
Huh?
It's not going to cost all this. Have you got two tens for a five? Just so happen to have it. That's it. Now,
that Elizabeth, I like her.
She's a regular scout, that's why. That's a woman that knows her stuff.
Just a minute.
Right, what's wrong?
Just a minute. $15 went south. You gave me a lot of your fast talking.
Now, take it easy.
Have you got 2 cents for five? And me, like I said, I'll give you 2 cents for five over there.
Wait a minute. Are you accusing me of cheating?
No, but you got 2 cents.
Here's your five. Give me back my 2 tens. Now, get...
Here's 2 tens. Give me a five.
Abbott and Costello from 1954, 55 maybe?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I remember watching those guys on television when I was growing up and so many funny routines. Who's on first? One of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
But the one that you just played, we listened to that actually on a recording that we listen to these old radio shows all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you know, what's wrong with us? Well, that's when things were actually entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. You had to be funny and clever without depending on being blue. But in a sense, and you watch, because the mess is going to be about that confusing. Because just a couple of things to throw out here, and I'm not even going to pretend to know how this is going to play out or what it means. Bank of America, which is sort of in the lead on this mortgage fraud, that has been perpetrated on the citizens of the United States and through the sale of mortgage-backed securities, the rest of the world. Bank of America is being sued by one of the largest hedge funds on Wall Street, PIMCO, and the New York Federal Reserve Bank.
What?
The New York Fed and a consortium, including this company, PIMCO, is suing Bank of America, claiming that they want Bank of America to buy back mortgages that were improperly sold as mortgage-backed securities. Now, these MBSs were sold.
Well, good luck straightening them out.
Well, yeah, I know. They're talking about $47 billion worth of securities here. Now, that's not $47 billion necessarily once they figure out how these have been sliced and diced into securities. But I don't even know how they begin to untangle this mess, because Bank of America has then turned around and has sued the FDIC over mortgage losses. The FDIC is suing, or is being sued by Bank of America because some banks that went belly up, and there have been a lot of banks that have tanked over the last 18 months. The FDIC took a bank from Alabama, Colonial Bank Group, into receivership, and as such, inherited the toxic assets of a company called Taylor, Bean, and Whitaker Mortgage Corporation. And according to Bank of America, it appears that these mortgages were double and even triple pledged as securities for these financial instruments that have been sold to investors all over the world.
Now, this is a massive hot potato game.
It is. It is. And this fraud may total up to another couple billion dollars worth of, hot potato. Who's the last one? To get stuck with the potato. The only winner in this Ponzi scheme is the first one out. And that's why these guys are now turning on each other like sharks in a feeding frenzy. They've gone nuts.
They've gone to the mattresses.
The Fed suing Bank of America, or the New York Fed. Bank of America suing the FDIC. Round and round this goes. Where it stops, nobody knows. And that's what I started thinking about this morning. I was thinking, you know, we are just beginning to realize this now here in America, but the piper is coming home to be paid. And that's I started. And then I asked you the question
and
this morning.
And that's why. So yeah. I'm sitting here in my chair.
Why do they call
and you
the
walk,
piper? Yeah.
Yeah. You walk up and you say to me, to me, it was out of the clear blue sky. You asked me.
Yeah. Why do they call the piper Pied? Why is a Pied Piper of Hamelin? Why was he Pied? He didn't have pies.
Look, the Pied Piper of Hamelin takes us back to 1954, because that's about the time that movie came out. And he played Abbott and Costello. Well, Van Johnson was in the Pied Piper of Hamelin, which had been a successful musical on stage.
Right.
Well, they
took
it to film, and it was a successful film. And I remember watching that so many times when I was a kid growing up. I loved that movie. And we watched it in black and white because we didn't have a color television when I was a kid. Now, later on, when I got to see it in color, it was, wow, that's even better. Well, when you asked that, I thought, I'm going to see if I can find out why he was called Pied. Well, I did find out, but I found out so much more than I ever wanted to know. Pied is actually an old term for multicolored. So the Pied Piper of Hamelin supposedly wore a multicolored costume, which if you look at the old Harlequin outfits and, you know, that it's essentially, you know, my clothes are running out, so I'm taking various things and making a quilt and wearing it. What I found out is that this is a true story.
Really?
It is. And if you go to our Instapaper site, you're going to find the link there to several articles that I found about this when I was doing some research for it. The Pied Piper of Hamelin is based on a true story in Hamelin, Germany, and it goes back to the year 1284. And did I just get softer?
No.
Oh, you just looked puzzled, and I thought, my voice sounds softer. It goes back to the year 1284, and it actually goes back to around June 20th, June 21st, some say June 26th of 1284. The reason I bring that up is because that is the summer solstice.
Okay.
Interesting day for this to take place. Well, there is the oldest, well, let me just complete this. The story is that 130 children disappeared from the town of Hamelin on that day.
130, huh?
130.
Mm-hmm.
There is an old, was, it's no longer extant, there was an old stained glass window that was discovered in Hamelin about, excuse me, about 100 years or so after the fact, about 1284 plus 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it depicted a scene of children being led out of town by something, someone playing a flute. So a Pied Piper, sort of, playing a pipe. This is, this image of someone playing a pipe is Pan.
Now, okay.
This is why this is so important, and I'll get more to it. And I'm going to study more about this, so I'll give you more tomorrow night. But this is what I found out so far. These children may have been killed.
Mm-hmm.
There is one version of the story that is only a couple of hundred years later that discusses how the children were found murdered, and they were found in near Koppelberg Hill. And I want to find the actual poem. In the year of 1284, on the day of Saints John and Paul, on 26 June, 130 children born in Hamelin were seduced by a piper dressed in all kinds of colors and lost at the place of execution near the Koppen.
Hmm.
Now, in the original German, there are words in here that have double meanings. This is sort of a poem that was found, that they think that it's called the Lüneburg Manuscript, and it's circa 1440-1450. The original language has Calvaria, which can be translated as Calvary. It's very close to it.
Hmm.
It actually means place of the skull, but here it's referring to execution. Verloren, which means lost. But Koppen can mean hills, or if you look at the, I think it's the Dutch language version of that, it can mean heads.
Ah.
So there are some who think, if you look at the sort of read between the lines, that what this poem is saying is that these children were found executed near these hills, and that some of them, or all of them, were beheaded.
Hmm.
Again, there are a lot of versions of this story, and
yeah,
it's tough to pin it down. I'm going to continue looking into this, but I also want to mention, I have to go back to my little Instapaper, I want to mention that one of the theories is that the children wandered away, that they were taken by St. John's dance, which, if you've ever read anything about early American settlements, you've read about the witchcraft trials Salem, and how ergotism is presumed to be the reason why these girls were going out on the moors, so to speak, and dancing in the moonlight. That's essentially what the danse macabre is.
Now, ergotism, that's a condition.
It's a fungus in wheat.
Yeah, brought in, and it is also the source of LSD.
Yes, it is. And there was a rampant, there were rampant cases of what is presumed to be, by scientists, ergotism in Europe for months, if not years, mm-hmm. if not decades. The only thing is that it's supposed to have begun in Aachen, Germany in 1374. That's 100 years
later,
after these kids disappeared.
Right, okay.
So the description of this affliction is that they dance like they're crazed.
Mm-hmm.
And they howl. They speak in tongues. They roll on the ground.
This sounds like a slain in the spirit.
I know.
Hyper-charismatic
and supposedly
worship service.
The reason it's called a dance is that many of them would dance and dance and dance as if they hear music.
Hmm. It's also, Well, I mean, it sounds like they were opened up to something and possessed. Now, some may say, okay, no, just if it is ergotism, may just be, ergot, just chemistry, body chemistry out of whack.
But what if it was ergotism, but ergotism itself, as with LSD, mm-hmm. as with DMT,
right.
opens up a doorway to a spiritual influence?
That's a very interesting question. There have been a number of theories, and no one is ever really going to prove what happened in Hamelin, but there are some, I mean, the disappearance of children like
of
that.
Of 130 children. It's a chilling story that I watched over and over again. Oh, look, what a warm, fuzzy story. And the presumption is that it was hundreds of years later that the rats were added mm-hmm. to the story to explain it all.
Oh, okay. So the rats were not part of the original tale.
No, not in most versions of it, not in most interpretations.
That's really interesting.
So what if a pan-like figure
mm-hmm.
led the children out of town and the children never returned? Now, again, there are other explanations, but we look at things from a spiritual viewpoint, and so we have to ask if there is even one source that is close to the original date
mm-hmm.
that is saying that it was a figure that may have killed them. It may have been a very early serial killer, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Then we have to ask ourselves, what was this?
Sure.
And is it happening still?
Mm-hmm.
And you better believe the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Your children are at risk.
Yeah.
And it may not be somebody showing up in, multicolored clothes.
No. It's very often a much friendlier guise. Or it may be somebody, as we talked about the other day, who presents himself or herself as a peer on the internet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Piping his way into your child's heart.
Yes. Well, anyway, kind of an interesting turn today, but sometimes that's how our minds work.
And, well, you know what? And I gotta bring up one last thing.
Well, fire away.
What was that on Google Street View? Switzerland.
Dateline.
What you got in the sky there?
That is kind of an interesting thing. And there have been things like this that have popped up in locations all over the globe. But, yeah, there's an artifact, it appears, in a Google Street View camera. You know, the little thing where you go to Google Maps and you can drag the little human-like cursor onto a street and suddenly you get a 360-degree view of what's on that street. I mean, you can look up the bunker on the,
This
view,
looks like something Terry Gilliam cut out and stuck in a, it looks like a Monty Python sketch.
It does. It's a picture of a mountain road above a Swiss lake with what looks like two hazy figures in the clouds.
It looks like the Pope sitting,
mm-hmm.
and it looks like some kind of a bishop or something next to him. I mean,
it almost looks, well, it looks to me like a bad Photoshop job. I mean, it does.
It does. It really does. So, if this is what's going on, because supposedly, you and I can't hack into Google, can we?
Huh.
So, is Google being hacked, or is Google trying to, play a game with us?
Yeah, they're just messing with us. I think that's what it is.
Sam says they're messing with us. He's underneath our desk right now crying.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to hear about that.
By the way, forgot to mention, Rob Skiba, who was the guest on View from the Bunker last Friday night, has demonstrated his skills as an editor and filmmaker by adding video and images to the discussion that we had for the hour about his forthcoming TV series Seed, based on the whole Nephilim Genesis 6 UFO paradigm that we often discuss. And so if you'd like to see the images and see especially some of the things he discussed regarding the Grotto of Pan and Mount Hermon, he's added a lot of those photos in there as well.
Wow.
So
he's fast.
You'll find a link to that at vftb.net. I put that up there at View from the Bunker. And also put up a link at my website, derekpgilbert.com, for the discussion I had last night with Carlotta Waldman on Crosswalk Talk.
We're running way long here.
We are, aren't we? Oh,
we need to just go away now.
Yes, back tomorrow. Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone.